from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri State Senator Carla May is used to defying political expectations. Throughout her time in Missouri state politics, the St. Louis Democrat defeated an incumbent state senator, the husband of a future mayor, and a sitting state representative in her elections to the Senate and House. She even defeated then-St. Louis Treasurer Tashara Jones in a committeewoman race. Now May is facing perhaps her biggest primary challenge to date, successfully countering a well-funded and well-organized effort from Independence resident Lucas Kuntz to take on GOP U.S. Senator Josh Hawley in November. And while Kuntz gathered up a slew of top-level labor and public official endorsements, May isn't walking into the August 6th primary without support of her own. Joining us now is State Senator Carla May, who represents portions of St. Louis and St. Louis County in the Missouri Senate. Senator May, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, as we mentioned in the introduction, you're an astute political operator, especially in the city of St. Louis. Why do you believe you can parlay electoral success in a fairly small geographic area to a statewide contest?
Well, thank you. I thank you for that question. So basically, people keep asking, you know, what's the path to victory here? So I've been in the legislature 14 years. And while I've been in the legislature, I've had many accomplishments. I have a proven track record of getting things done. And most people around the state know me because I've traveled around the state while performing my duties as an elected legislative senator and as a House, you know, a representative's member. I've traveled around the state performing my duties, and I've been on television a lot, you know, when we're in debate about certain issues. So people are aware of my name, and I feel like if I can get my information to them and let them know about my record, I can be successful. I will be successful in this race.
We'll talk more about the dynamics of this race near the end of our conversation, but let's talk about issues because people probably care more about what you think on the issues than the horse race. If you were in the Senate and a bill came before you to provide military aid to Israel, would you be supportive or opposed to this and why?
So I would be supportive of providing military support to Israel because, first of all, Israel is our ally in that context. But let me give you a broader context. So, you know, we have to protect our interests, the United States, around the world. And if I go back into my past a little, I was a, you know, ROTC student when I started at St. Louis University.
I had no idea about that.
I know. And so I took a lot of courses in, you know, politics and policy around the, you know, around the world, around the globe. And we align based on our interests and our democracies and the way we kind of govern. And if you look at what's happening around the world, you have democracies up against dictatorships. And if you take a look at what's happening with Ukraine right now, it's a democracy, and you see Putin trying to move forward in that democracy. If you put the chess pieces on the board, you will understand what's really happening. So I support our allies. And I mean, that doesn't mean that our allies are not doing something, you know, we can't call them out on.
Well, that was going to be my next question. A lot of Democratic voters in Missouri and elsewhere have expressed shock and outrage over the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. And they blame Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government for the continuing violence. So why should Democratic officials continue to support Israel with this context in mind?
Well, let me tell you something. It's like, we can support our allies and then also call them out on what they're doing wrong. So if there's a problem with the way Netanyahu is handling the war, we have a right to call them out on that. But you still don't abandon your allies in the middle of a battle.
And do you think he is, are you going to call him out? Like, would you call him out right now for doing a lot of bad things?
Absolutely. I would call him out and let him know, you know, that he's doing things, you know, that are contrary. Everybody cares about life. I don't care who you're talking about. I don't care whose lives it is. People care about, you know, women and children that are dying. But at the same time, when the United States got bombed by 9/11, no one questioned the United States approach in going into Iraq. And
you mean Afghanistan?
Well, we went both places.
We did, but right after 9/11, we went into Afghanistan, yeah. And then we went into Iraq in 2003. So I want to make sure I understand you correctly.
Yes. So no one would question, you know, our approach or, you know, why we, you know, responded the way we responded.
Because I was in college in 2003. A lot of countries did question us going into Iraq. I just want to make that clear. But Afghanistan, I think Barbara Lee, the congresswoman from California, was the only person to vote against that, from my understanding. But you mentioned Ukraine earlier. We talked during filing day about you are supportive of continuing to provide military assistance from the United States to Ukraine. But some Republicans have questioned whether that support should be open-ended and it should be dependent on the aid actually achieving successful results. Are there any metrics you would look at which would prompt you to maybe think twice about supporting Ukraine in the future if you're elected to the U.S. Senate?
Let me tell you, when you're elected to office as a legislator, you're going to look at every bill and what's in those bills. And you're also going to look at the metrics that are attached to the bills, because mm-hmm. every piece of legislation or everything that you're doing, whether you're appropriating money, you always look at the metrics and are those metrics achievable by the entities that you're appropriating the money to. That's just smart legislating. And I've done that for 14 years as being on appropriations and budget for 13 years. While I was in the legislature. So absolutely. So you don't blindly vote for anything. You're going to have to evaluate every piece of legislation. And sometimes you're going to have to say no, even though it's to our allies, or you're going to have to amend some bills. You're going to have to amend some bills that you like, and you're going to have to amend some bills that you don't like in order to make the bill better and make it more more meeting the metrics.
On abortion, let's just say you had your way and you were able to craft a bill legalizing abortion everywhere. What would kind of be the parameters? Would you want it to be up to the period that's known as fetal viability, 24, 28 weeks of pregnancy, which was basically what Roe v. Wade was when it was decided? Or would you want to do something completely different?
I would, first of all, I think that we're in this conversation about women. Mm-hmm. And let me just be honest with you. I don't think women's decisions or their choice should be questioned. I don't think you should question my faith or my choice to have an abortion. So I think that abortion should be accessible for individuals who need to make that decision, point blank. Now, you want to get into the details? When we're getting into the details, we have to make sure that details in law are not so strenuous that people die. Because right now, you have doctors who are worried about violating the law instead of saving a life of a mother. So I think that people who are trying to legislate this issue or trying to legislate it from their own personal religious perspective. But in my experience with Christ, he said, whosoever will, let him come. So don't question a woman's faith and don't question her choice.
Yeah, I want to just ask a similar question to that. There could be a lot of voters in Missouri who have religious objections to abortion and they want to essentially transpose those objections into law. What would you say to voters who may consider you in the general election, who hear something like that and feel they can't vote for you because you want legal abortion?
Well, like I said, you know, we have in this country, we're taking an oath to support the Constitution. And under the Constitution, you have a freedom of religion and you can't impose your religious beliefs on other individuals. And I'll stand on that all day long. Now, if we are to codify something in law, I'm not saying that we can't say late-term abortion should not happen. Right? I don't believe in abortion. But at the same time, you can't make a law determining somebody else's choice or what they think should happen with their own bodies. That's where I am. And we have freedom of religion. People have to understand that's the Constitution and that's where we are.
Well, that is a good segue to my next question, because I've known you for a long time and your faith is unquestioned. And Senator Hawley recently engendered some controversy when he talked about the concept of Christian nationalism. Here's a quote. "The truth is, Christian nationalism is not a threat to American democracy. Christian nationalism founded American democracy, and it is the best form of democracy yet devised by man. The most just, the most free, the most humane, and praiseworthy." I'm not sure if you listened to the entirety of his comments, but what do you think of the comment I just read to you?
So let me say it this way. We had individuals who founded a country. You got me? And that's why I think God is a, you know, amazing God. Because you had individuals who founded a country. Some of them had slaves, and some of them probably was mistreating their slaves, more than likely. If they was a slave, they was mistreated.
Thomas Jefferson comes to mind.
Absolutely.
To put it mildly.
Yes. And so at the same time, these people, you know, if you read any of the books by Frederick Douglass, he tell you the worst thing he learned was that the people that claimed they were Christians were the worst slave owners. They was the most abusive people. So you have, it's a different thing to have religion and to have a relationship with Christ. Those are two different things. You got me? Because people want to have these things where they impose Christ on you, but you don't have to impose anything if you love people. Love covers a multitude of sin. So if you love people, you don't have to impose anything on him. So that Christian nationalism, where I have to tell you, our country was formed fighting against imposed religion. Basically, the Protestant, the Catholic, whatever it was that Europe was trying to impose on the United States, we broke away from that. And that's why in our Constitution, it says the freedom of religion. So you have these freedoms, and we have to exercise those freedoms under the Constitution. If you are concerned about somebody else's belief system, you know, and you're a Christian, you need to do the Great Commission. And that is, go ye therefore into all the world and teach and preach the gospel. Because to me, the only thing that's going to change the hearts of man is the word of God. You or a person is not going to be able to influence somebody's decisions. You can't come into my house and I'm hungry and telling me what I need to do in order to become unhungry without meeting my need first, because I'm not going to hear you.
So
I'm hungry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you're
there.
Fine.
So I asked this question to Congresswoman Bush first, and I guess I'll ask you last for symmetry. There are some Democrats that want Joe Biden to drop out of the presidential race after his debate on June 27th. Are you one of those people who feel that the president should step aside?
Absolutely not. I think Joe Biden is our candidate, and I think Joe Biden can win. I will take wisdom over lies any day. And I've been in this legislature, and I've seen the perpetuation of untruths, and those perpetuations of untruths is not good for our democracy. And so I think that Biden can win, and I think that he should stay in the race, because one thing people don't understand is this. You still have to get on the ballot in 50 states. And from now until November, a new candidate still will have to get on the ballot in 50 states. And the rules are different in every state. And there are deadlines that probably have already passed and different conditions that can't be met. You got to look it up.
Yeah, I think it depends on the state. But since the Democrats haven't nominated a presidential candidate yet, I'm not sure if they apply unless he drops out afterward. But I don't know the rules for every state. But in the last minute, why do you think he can win? Because if you listen to, we were talking about this with Sarah, a lot of Democrats don't feel he can win anymore. And they feel like his age is such an albatross around him that he's never going to be able to recover from what happened in that debate.
Well, if you take an hour and a half, you're using an hour and a half of conversation over 4 years of accomplishments and legislative experience. I'm not saying that President Biden is not an aged man, but I'll take wisdom and age and a few missteps in oratory over somebody who has no substance, no, that lies repetitively, that also has been accused of rape, has been convicted of all of these crimes and has no remorse and no repentive, sorry, nothing, and you want me to vote for him. I have over 87,000 or more individuals, or 87 million or more individuals that have felons in this country that cannot vote. Now, the Republicans, you're asking me to vote for a convicted felon when you won't even allow the ones that we've already released that didn't serve their time to vote? Come on now. Let's stop the hypocrisy.
State Senator Carla May is a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate. We're working with Democrat Lucas Kuntz to come on the Politically Speaking Hour before the August 6th primary. Senator, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And we're pleased to welcome back St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg. Sarah, what did you think of our interview with Senator May?
I think Senator May is drawing a lot of what she's learned from her work in the legislature to her campaign, showing kind of her dedication to both the St. Louis area and also just kind of her tenacity as a lawmaker and why that would translate in the Senate.
Yeah, we didn't get into it because I really was going down the issue rabbit hole, which I think is better. She's been outraised by Lucas Kuntz by a huge margin, but she does have a lot of support. St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones, who I mentioned in the introduction, endorsed her. And there are a lot of other officials that are pretty enthusiastic about her campaign. Do you think that she can overcome the money advantage?
I mean, I think she has before, if I'm incorrect, right on her first Senate
race.
Yeah, so I think there's a precedent there. And I think that her presence in the Senate is very St. Louis focused, and very much you can tell that she is going to stand up for the constituents of her district and in St. Louis in general. Whatever bills that come up that affect St. Louis, she's going to stand up and talk about it. And I think that that will translate well into St. Louis, and it could go beyond the St. Louis area. I think there is a question of whether or not her name gets into different areas of Democratic voters that aren't St. Louis, but I do think that she can come overcome that if she wants.
We've been covering a lot of primary races for St. Louis Public Radio collectively, and despite the fact that the Senate race is probably going to be the marquee matchup of the general election, this Kuntz-May primary matchup has flown a little bit under the radar. It hasn't been really contentious or nasty like the first district race. First of all, do you agree with that? And how do you think the fact this race isn't that contentious could affect the winner's chances in November?
I think it won't affect November. I think it's just showing that they genuinely probably agree on things and more or less like each other. You haven't seen really those big attack ads, and that doesn't, you know, cause news or buzz and flash. And so, I do think really they are similar on the issues. I don't think it's going to impact November because, as we talked before, I think abortion's going to be on the ballot most likely. And Holly is such a big figure, whether, you know, Republicans support him, Democrats don't like him. I think that's a big enough that it's not going to really detract and affect the winner's chances either way.
Most national prognosticators believe Holly is favored in his reelection bid, probably because Missouri is Republican leaning. Donald Trump's going to win the state. But with a measure to legalize abortion, as you've mentioned a couple times, is it possible Republicans like him could face tougher races than usual?
I think it could be a tougher race. I'm not sure on the bigger marquee races that you're going to look at the top of the ballot, but I think when we're getting to more local elections, when it comes to state races, when it comes to state Senate races, I think that's way more effective to, like, I think Republicans are going to face a tougher challenge than they would in other years.
I think it really depends on a lot of things, including whether national groups feel either May or Kuntz are viable. And I hate to put so much weight into what, like, outside groups think about, but in U.S. Senate races and House races, too, it is so critical. If you don't get that, like, support and money and organization, it's kind of like an implicit suggestion that you're not going to win and it's not worth our time. So I guess it's going to be, it remains to be seen whether that happens in the fall.
I think that Holly is a big enough name in national politics, whether you're from Missouri or not, that I think any opponent to him is probably going to get quite a bit of support.
Oh, I expect a lot of national reporters to make a lot of trips to Missouri in the fall simply because of Holly's profile. And also, I think there'll be a lot of speculation that if he wins, he may run for president in 2028 because Donald Trump cannot run for a third term and it's going to be an open seat because, you know, Sarah, I've always wanted to travel across Iowa and I'm My grandpa's from there, so I can go see.
We're going to have a great road trip, Jason.
Sarah Kellogg is St. Louis Public Radio State House and politics reporter. Sarah, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. You got it.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.